Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
You are listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. And if you were growing up in the 70s and 80s, it did not get much hotter than Donna Summer. Songs like Hot Stuff and Love to Love You Baby took the music world by storm in those days and earned her the nickname Queen of Disco. But there's a lot more to Summer than meets the eye. A new Max documentary called Love to Love You, Donna Summer, pulls back the curtain on a woman quietly struggling with the pressures of being a global icon, a music pioneer, a mother, a sister, a daughter. It also dives into how her career had its humble beginnings right here in Boston. So we are doing a special set in Boston today about the Queen of Disco with Dart Adams, a journalist, researcher, and host of Dart Against Humanity and the Boston Legends podcast. Welcome back, Dart.
Thanks.
Also here with us, Christian Berno, a WBUR contributor and former arts and culture fellow here. Christian, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you. Happy to be back.
Great to have you back. So first off, what did you think of the documentary, Christian?
I thought it was a really great start into the story and lore of Donna Summer. Generally, I would have loved to have like more sort of on the front end about her time in Boston and deep dive a little bit more into who her collaborators were. Right now, as we're in the middle of sort of a disco revival in popular culture and music, I think this was a great start to that conversation around the most prominent figure of the genre.
So, Dart, we should note that one of the directors, one of the creative minds behind this documentary is Donna Summer's daughter, Brooklyn Sedano. So In a lot of ways, it's the quest of a daughter to better understand a mother. But one of the things that we've talked to you about in the past is this hunt to better understand why Boston doesn't always embrace the people who have changed the world who came from Boston. And it is true that this is not a documentary that fully brings Donna Summer home to Boston.
Yeah. We were talking about it outside. The thing is that, yes, it's about her daughter trying to figure out aspects of her mother that she wasn't given access to because, you know, if her mom dealt with so much trauma that she didn't want to fully let her in to certain things and kind of want to shield her from that. But as in terms of like, she had family, luckily, in Boston that were able to give her some background and some information that other people typically didn't have. Because me growing up, I was born in 75. So me growing up, I grew up in a culture, in a city, in neighborhoods that always embraced Donna Summer and accepted her as their champion. The city as a whole did not. So that's one of the issues that we're dealing with.
So she's born LaDonna Adrian Gaines of Roxbury, graduates from the Burke, but quickly leaves.
Yeah.
In the film, we know that she has to first go to New York, where she feels more sort of free to be herself. She winds up actually in Germany. She goes to Munich. She stars in Hair. Mm-hmm. But she does, Christian, have to leave Boston kind of literally to find her voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that Berlin, this is something we were discussing earlier. I think that Berlin is has been a really great incubator for people and pioneers of any sort of dance music or electronic music. And a lot of people who maybe had a hard time breaking into the scene here in the States would go to Berlin to sort of get their start and find their voice and have the flexibility to be creative in any way they saw themselves doing that. She manifested herself famous and worked really hard to do that, but like knew she was going to be famous either by singing, by acting, dancing, just being a part of musicals, being a model. And Germany allowed her the space to do that.
So then 74, she releases her first album, but what really she makes it big here in the United States is when she drops this in 1975. So much we could talk about here. You know, it's banned by the BBC as being deemed too sexually suggestive. It's controversial. Her own kids basically didn't get to hear it until they found out someone somewhere else. And one of the sisters is like, oh, you got to hear this, right? But it goes to number two in the Hot 100 chart. Dart, just sort of, it's complicated, right? Because she's liberating gay culture in America, women in the early 70s who are fighting for the chance to have birth control, all kinds of things. She becomes an icon of all of that. And yet she's also condemned for being a sexually free black woman as she's playing this character on stage.
Yeah, so there's whole bunch of things to unbox there, right? First, she comes up as a church kid in Boston. And a family that, you know, she kind of has to escape because, yes, she had to leave Boston in order to find her fortune, but she also needed to escape her family in order to be her full-fledged person. But she grows up in, like, the Grant AME Church, you know, on the border of Roxbury and in Southend, you know. She goes to school at the Burke, you know, and, like, in that community, she's known as, like, also on one side, she's Sister Summer. But then on the other side, you know, it's LaDonna who's like the risk taker doing shows and clubs as a teenager and stuff like that. But then when she keeps having to compartmentalize and keeps having to bring up this persona in order to perform and find herself. So when she does this, it's another facet of her where she's like, all right, I'm going to explore my sexuality and my sensuality and I'm a beautiful woman. And they use all of this and also her voice. Mm. This is not the same voice that people in Boston who heard her sing in clubs or sing at church are familiar with.
Can
they almost didn't know
it
was her.
As we're, keep talking. I just want people to hear her voice in the background if we can bring it back up.
Yeah.
Keep talking.
Like, it's almost as if she's a different person. She's a different being. So now she's accepted by this entirely different community, and she's an icon that represents all these different things. And it's like, okay, so... And yes, we talked about she always thought she was going to be famous. And she realizes, oh my God, this is the way I do it.
This is how it
happens. She just rides the wave.
So talk some more about all the ground, Christian, that she breaks with this song.
Yeah, this is the story behind it is incredible. How it was the length of a regular song and then... played over and over again at a party where people could not stop.
They keep saying, can you just play it again? Can you just play it again?
Yeah, exactly. And now it's like an incredible 15-minute sort of mammoth of a track at this point. And even whenever I turn it on today, I'm like, wow, this is 15. And you just can't get the melody out of your head. You can't get her like crooning over the track out of your head. It was unlike anything kind of ever done before. And there really hasn't been anything like it since, which I think is why it's used as a reference all the time, even today with the sort of with the disco revival happening. You know, Beyonce sampled it on her last big project, and was sampled on her first solo project, and all of the Dua Lipa, Jessie Ware, like all of these people sort of referencing this one song from this like very particular time from a genre that was not taken seriously because she was a black woman doing it and because a lot of her fans were queer. Like, what a huge feat for this song to go global the way that it did.
We're speaking with Christian Bruno and Dart Adams about the new documentary, Love to Love You, Donna Summer, about Donna Summer, you know, Boston's... hometown, you know, disco queen. And I won't say hometown hero because that's part of the point is that we never let her become a hometown hero.
I feel as though I was quoted in Boston Magazine when my boy Greg Valentino Ball did a piece about New Edition years ago. And I said that one of the big issues with Boston is that it doesn't embrace anybody non-white until they do a certain thing or until they it's 30 years later. And they didn't really, Boston as a whole didn't embrace Donna Summer until she passed and accepted her as Boston's disco queen. And then they started doing the disco dance parties out in the public. But in the inner city in Boston and Roxbury and Dorchester and Mattapan, they always celebrated Donna Summer. You go to Chez Vu and they throw on Donna Summer, everybody goes crazy. Go out to Cookout, they throw on Donna Summer, everybody dances to it because they accepted her as like one of their own. It's just like any other piece that I've done about Boston music, I've explained it like, yes, everybody knows about the Cars, you know about Jay Giles Band, you know about, you know, Aerosmith, but there's so much more rich culture to Boston is, and what it is Black music, you know?
So there are Donna Summer disco parties every year now. Heads up, there's one. I think it's down near City Hall. It's on June 16th this year. Mm-hmm. Donna Summer died in 2012. We're talking right now with Love to Love You, Baby, about a song that came out in 1975.
Yes.
So this is a long time in this arc that Dart Adams is talking about. I want to bring Donna Summer's daughter's voice back in here. So Brooklyn Sedano is one of Donna Summer's daughters. Mm-hmm. She talked at the Independent Film Festival with Here and Now's Robin Young when the documentary first aired, and explained how a piece of how her mother's music connected with people.
Part of the reason she was able to connect with people the way that she was through her music was because she saw people. She saw, you know, that inner thing, that pain, was able to connect, even if it was a dance song. People would cry on the, you know, I had so many people like, I was dancing to Try Me, Try Me, Try Me, and I just broke down in tears because they felt seen.
And I'm going to put that with sound from another daughter. This is her daughter, Mimi, her first child, who she had in Germany and brought back to the United States with her. Mimi lived with her parents in Massachusetts for a good chunk of her life. Mm-hmm. And Mimi talks about the price that she paid once she was so famous that everybody wanted a piece of her.
You could just see it in her face. It wasn't just like, I'm tired. It was like a soul weariness, though. It would almost make me sad for her. I get to go back to my grandparents' house and have a normal life, but she is getting pulled in every direction.
And they do note in the documentary that Donna Summer talks about at one point admitting that she nearly tried to end her life in a hotel room. And I do, we always do this. If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, you can text or call 988 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to receive support. But there was a price to being as exceptional as Donna Summer was, Christian.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to sort of like lay out some of the context for the all of the sort of things she was up against. Mm-hmm. Disco was just like this really euphoric, gorgeous genre that was not widely accepted by critics or whoever the sort of mainstream was. It was like this cool underground oozy sexy thing. So it doesn't surprise me that people were brought to tears by her music. But also in sort of like the height of her career in the late 70s, you know, there's things like the disco demolition event that happened at a Major League Baseball event, and people were tearing up and destroying disco records because they just opposed that music and what it meant. And that's like what she was up against, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she was making these gorgeous concept albums that people are trying to do today. Mm-hmm. But back in the 70s, as a Black woman who was admittedly playing a character to, you know, spread joy and dance and all of these wonderful things. Like, she was, I mean, it was stacked against her.
Let's pull some more of her music back up in the background as we continue this piece of the conversation. I just don't want to go too long without some Donna Summer music in the background as we talk. So, Dart, pick back up on that, because she was pushing the envelope. Mm-hmm. All the time. She was, I mean, we always celebrate David Bowie for the characters he was playing on stage.
Yes.
But Donna Summer was playing characters on stage all the time.
Yeah, because again, when she had to compartmentalize and she was realizing that I'm doing performance art on stage for people and I want to push it a new direction, because she loved disco. She loved what it did for her popularity. She loved that she was able to get an audience that way, but she didn't want to be fenced in. She didn't want to be pigeonholed. I can do this. I can do that. She was a chameleon. And at the same time, it came at a price, because the more she tried to keep people from pigeonholing her and keeping her in a box, and the more new ground that she explored and succeeded in, the more people took credit for it, and then they pushed her even more to do more. And there's a limit, you know, there's a physical and there's an emotional limit that she reached.
So now we move forward. It's 1983. She becomes the first Black woman to be prominently featured in a music video on MTV. Mm-hmm. She's inspired by Annetta Johnson at a Grammys after party, who is a bathroom attendant. And I want to note that the song we're about to play actually just celebrated its 40th anniversary mm-hmm. with a remastered release. This is She Works Hard for the Money. Mm-hmm. Feminist, right? Mm-hmm. She's exploring and pioneering on MTV. We go back now and we talk about the song of that era. We go Dolly Parton, 9 to 5. Mm-hmm. We don't go She Works Hard for the Money, but this was a pioneering song. She was moving out of disco. She was taking on a new front. And she was a Black woman talking about working class women in America.
Yes, I think this is a really good time to bring up the fact that she also was like an incredible songwriter, yeah. arranger, helped with production, including with this. Like, she tells the story of how she came across this bathroom attendant and then like just automatically was thinking of like the melody and the lyrics in her head and wrote it very quickly and then showed us who she was talking about. This is a person who like wants to reach back into her community or the people that inspired her. And at that same time, we also have to respect the fact that she was an incredible musician. This isn't someone who is singing songs on stage. She really created her own world that we were lucky mm-hmm. enough to be invited into.
Mm-hmm. She also had a time when she alienated a lot of her fans. Mm-hmm. She did eventually note that she had been sexually abused at the hands of her pastor mm-hmm. when she was growing up. She became a born-again Christian. She made a comment about marriage not being between two men in a concert and was later reported to have said a number of anti-gay statements that she vehemently denied that she said. Here she is in a press conference denying those things.
The magazine stated that I said homosexuals were sinners and AIDS was a divine ruling. That is completely false. I did not say it. I do not believe that.
I would never say the things attributed to me in that article.
And it was a complicated piece. There are those who have still never forgiven her. There are other members of the gay community who eventually believed that she had not meant to alienate the gay community like that. And the legacy continues to move on. I want a little bit of sound here from a cover from Selena, the late Selena Quintanilla, who, and this is her last final live show in Houston, 1995, and she's covering On the Radio. She also, by the way, covered Last Dance.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dart, incredible legacy, complicated, I mean, she was human, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This happens. How do we think about her today, 2023?
Basically, I think of her as like a pioneer. She was a person who changed music forever. She took a genre that people didn't take seriously and raucous, and people who were really into rock and everything else hated. People in the hip hop kind of tolerated, and she made it into high art. You know, she took disco and she made it something that people who were critics who kind of were against it and you know, shoved it aside, couldn't ignore. And then she made classic albums that she kind of spearheaded, but other people took credit for. Like, I think of the song She Works Hard for the Money. She was talking about all these women, but also herself.
Yeah.
You know, like, she did so much work and you better treat her right. And she dealt with so much trauma. And what does she get for it in the end? You know,
last word to you, Christian Bruno.
I think that Donna Summer has an incredible legacy that will continue to live on. I'm really excited for our sort of jump into the lore and story of Donna Summer. I only think it will go up from here and we'll get more as people become interested in the reference for that time. So,
all right. So we're going out on Last Dance. Of course.
Of course.
Christian Berno, WBUR contributor, Dart Adams, journalist, researcher, and podcast host. The documentary is Love to Love You, Donna Summer, available now on Max. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.